You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't pass on the Savage Lovecast.
There was a military coup d'etat in Argentina in 1976, and forgive me, I'm going to get a little Rachel Maddow-y at the top of my show today, if that's all right. This right-wing military junta would wind up running the country for 8 bloody years. More than 30,000 people were disappeared during Argentina's dirty war. Activists, union organizers, journalists. And most of the disappeared were young people, men and women in their late teens, 20s, early 30s, students. Some of the women who were arrested were pregnant. Because Argentina is an overwhelmingly Catholic country, and because the men running the junta were themselves good Catholics, they didn't execute these pregnant women. They held them until they gave birth, and then they executed them. And their children, these stolen children, were given to childless military families to, quote-unquote, adopt and raise. More than 500 Argentinian children were stolen from their parents in this way, and it was only decades later that many would learn of their true identities and what happened to their actual mothers and fathers. Revisiting a shameful chapter in another nation's history is not meant to deflect attention from the shameful chapter or shameful chapters, plural, the dozens and dozens of them currently being written in our nation, in the United States. And the United States, of course, it must be acknowledged, played a role in Argentina's dirty war. Henry Kissinger, then the Secretary of State, encouraged the Argentinian coup leaders to destroy their opponents quickly. All those activists, union organizers, students and journalists, all those pregnant women. And he suggested they destroy them quickly so the dirty work could all be done before there was an outcry over human rights abuses. It was impossible to read this story in the Associated Press this weekend without thinking of Argentina's dirty war and appropriated children. The headline undersells the horror. Deported parents may lose kids to adoption. We are separating children from their parents at the border, still, including infants and toddlers. And as the AP reported this weekend, holes in immigration law are allowing state court judges to grant custody of migrant children to American families without notifying their deported parents. Most of the people who've had their children taken from them, the parents who've had their children stolen from them at our border, were claiming asylum, which is their legal right. These mothers and fathers were not breaking the law when they showed up at points of entry. They were following the law. And our government, in our names, took their children, dumped their children into cages and camps without any way to track these children, reunite them with their parents, and then deported their parents. The Office of Refugee Resettlement, a U.S. agency, is facilitating the thefts of these children, as are private adoption agencies like Bethany Christian Services. The AP story is a must-read and a harrowing read. It's also an indictment. If you didn't see it, go look it up and read it. Henry Kissinger, that old war criminal, urged the Argentinian generals to move fast so they could get their bloody work done before outrage at the human rights abuses in that country could build. But this hasn't been happening quickly here. This hasn't happened fast. The abuses at our border of migrants and asylum seekers and their children unfolded slowly over the last 3 years. And sometimes, I don't know how we sleep at night. Impeachment or defeat at the polls next November, I want this nightmare to end. But there are people out there, mothers and fathers, for whom this nightmare will never end. And these kids, like those 500 kids in Argentina, are one day going to learn the truth about what happened to them. The leaders of the military junta in Argentina were tried and convicted, and some went to prison, and then they were released, and then they were tried again and sent to prison again. The president, during the military dictatorship, was sent to prison for kidnapping those 500 children. There are lawsuits coming in the United States about this, and if there's any justice, which there may not be, there will be indictments and trials and long jail sentences for Stephen Miller and anyone and everyone in the Trump administration, including Trump himself, who had a hand in kidnapping children from their parents here. Our dirty war against immigrants. Sorry, this is so heavy. I'm actually making a bit of an effort to keep the top of the show lighter, but I literally can't think of anything else this morning but those stolen kids and their grieving, gutted parents. And there's really no graceful way to pivot from this topic. Maybe 3 solid minutes of me banging my head on this desk. So instead, I'll just say, coming up on today's show, on the micro, tons of your Q's, lots of my A's, and on the magnum edition of the Savage Lovecast, author Simon Doonan joins us to talk about his new book, Drag, The Complete Story. And I challenge him, can Simon Doonan get me back into drag? You can subscribe to the magnum edition of the Savage Lovecast, twice as long and no ads, at savagelovecast.com. All that coming up on today's show. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Blue Apron. Check out this week's menu and get $60 off at blueapron.com/savage. We talk a lot about butt play on this podcast, one of my specialties, but let's talk about keeping your butt clean. Everybody poops, but not everybody cleans their butts well. Enter Tushy, the modern bidet attachment that cleans all the dookie, dingleberries, and dumps off your butt after every poop. It easily attaches to any standard toilet in under 10 minutes and provides a precise stream straight to your butthole. Tushy gives you a thorough and focused wash with fresh, clean water. And it starts at, everyone's favorite number, $69. Do your ass a favor and wash with Tushy. Go to HelloTushy.com and get 10% off your order with promo code SAVAGE. Stop wiping and start washing with Tushy. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Bull and Branch, luxury, affordable, fair trade certified sheets. Get $50 off a set of sheets plus free shipping by going to bullandbranch.com and entering Savage.
Hi, I'm in my early 30s and I live in a large city on the East Coast. I'm calling because I was seeing this guy and he knew that I was really paranoid about getting pregnant. And he told me that he had a vasectomy. And then we were seeing each other for a year, and then I noticed that I was getting symptoms like I was pregnant, but I couldn't believe it. And I took a test, and it turned out that I was pregnant. And while I am pro-choice, I found the whole experience was just the worst situation of my life, going through the whole procedure to not be pregnant anymore. And then after that, I found out that while I was pregnant, he told another girl that he had a vasectomy. And then I found other women who he also got pregnant, some who had abortions, and one woman who kept the child, who he has this estranged child who it's unclear if he ever met that child and owes so much money in child support that he can't even get a passport to travel out of the country. So I hired a lawyer, and the lawyer said that we have an action for battery, but all of my friends think that this is basically my fault, and they disagree with me getting a lawyer, and they disagree that he did anything wrong to me. But I really feel that he traumatized me and other women, and he robbed me of my choice not to get pregnant and stole my first pregnancy from me. So my question is, I basically, do you think that this is a trauma? And my second question is, could I be friends with these people who support him? He's a part of our community, and a lot of people have just taken his side, defending him or saying that these are things that happen and risks that you take when you have sex with someone. I just don't think it's right.
You don't say whether you confronted this guy about the lie. And my guess, and maybe you didn't feel you needed to mention it because it's obvious, my guess is he's lied about having a vasectomy. Vasectomies have a failure rate of 0.15%. The failures tend to evidence themselves within the first couple of months after the vasectomy. So he knows, with all these women that he's knocked up, he knows that he either didn't have a vasectomy or the vasectomy that he claims and lies about having had failed. Obviously, this dude has some sort of impregnation kink, fetish, obsession, and obviously he has power and control issues and gets off on the thought of his dick like some sort of sex partner destruction missile. Listening to your call reminds me of the guys who claimed during the worst years of the HIV/AIDS epidemic that if the person that they were fucking didn't ask them to wear a condom, even though they knew themselves to be positive and they didn't know the status of the person they were fucking, they didn't have to wear a condom because people are responsible for their own choices. Kind of the bullshitty things, similar to the bullshitty things, your soon-to-be ex-friends are saying to you about this piece of shit who sexually assaulted you. He obtained your consent to sex under false pretenses. I'm with your lawyer. There is a case here and you should bring it and you should find out if there are any other women out there in your social circle that he's dated and that he's also done this to who might want to join your lawsuit. Not that you're going to get much money out of this asshole. He's already being dinged for the child support payments he's not making, but you can and you should make an example of him. He should be held accountable. And whatever community that you're in, where he's also a part of that community, a community with apparently no respect for women, for women's bodily autonomy, and a community where there is no accountability, even just social accountability, for men who behave terribly, get the fuck out of that community. Find or create better communities for yourself. Make new and better friends. And sue that motherfucker. Prosecute him. Take him to court. File a complaint. Hold him accountable.
Hi, Dan, Nancy, and the tech-savvy at-risk you. I'm a hetero, cis, 40-something male living in a large East Coast city. So I think I'm just out of a 3.5-year relationship, and maybe I'm just dense, but I can't tell. The relationship's been a good one overall. The sex was excellent. I got along with her and her family, her friends, her kid. We've supported each other through some difficult events, and I think we've been good to and for each other in many ways. This year, I've gone from two good jobs to having some serious money problems. I've been mostly unemployed since February. I'm struggling to pay basic bills. I have over 20 years of experience in my industry, but all I can find is a stressful part-time retail job. So things could be better. I've also noticed some changes in her this year. She lost her temper a lot more, wasn't communicating well, not respecting some boundaries. I've seen her go from a social drinker to what very well could be a problem drinker, and her pot use has also escalated dramatically. Then, seemingly out of nowhere, a few days after I started the retail job, she either wouldn't text me back or I'd get a very perfunctory reply. It was kind of out of character, and I thought maybe I've been too negative or complained a lot recently, and maybe a bit of space would be a good idea. I did some reading about how to take a break, even listen to a Lovecast episode in which you discussed a healthy way to go about it. I convinced her to have a talk, and sure enough, we'd both been thinking about giving each other some space and alone time. She said she didn't want to break up or date other people. She told me she feels very helpless about my current situation. And I thought we agreed about what we wanted from this break, some boundaries and logistics, such as monthly check-ins, and she said she hoped I could get my confidence back. I thought we were on the same page, but she just blew through all of what we talked about. I mean, she wished me a happy birthday on Facebook and Instagram, but then promptly made excuses to avoid our first monthly check-in and asked me to take her credit card off a bill that we share, and some other of what looked like some disrespectful gestures that indicate she's pushing me away. I'm not comfortable with this, and I can't tell what's going on, but as I said, maybe I'm just really dense. Has she checked out and the relationship is over and I'm just in denial? Or is it really just some alone time, but she just unilaterally decided to handle it in her own way? Did we miscommunicate somewhere, such as how we're defining a break, or is she waiting for me to get back on my feet? And if that's the case, do I really want to be in a relationship or even stay friends with someone who only wants me around when it's convenient? I know you hear worse stories, and this isn't exactly ghosting, but after 3.5 years, I'm feeling abandoned and pushed away at a really bad time in my life. So, Dan, would you please offer some perspective about what's happened and maybe some advice on what, if anything, I can do?
The more rules and rituals you establish or create to manage your time apart, the more opportunities you have to fuck that up, the more opportunities they have to fuck that up. Seems a little elaborate to me, these monthly check-ins and whatever else that you guys established as the protocol for your time apart, for your alone time. And perhaps since you seem to be the one who is invested in these protocols and these rules, maybe they were your idea and she just agreed and said the things that people often say during a breakup that aren't necessarily true, which can include, I don't really want to break up, even as they know in their souls and their hearts that breaking up, even if it's not what they really want, is what they're really doing. And it kind of sounds like she's broken up with you, that she's separated from you in a more profound way than you were willing to allow her to separate from you when you established all of these protocols and rules about how your temporary, a part-time, alone time pseudo breakup was going to work. My advice to you would be to pay attention to her actions and not her words. And not getting a lot of words from her, since you're not getting the calls that you were promised during your separation, during your trial separation. Sounds to me like she's disengaged. Maybe it's the pot, maybe it's the alcohol, but it's definitely going to be a benefit, I think, to you. You're in a rough place in your life professionally, and that may require all of your focus at this time. And maybe it would be a boon to you, a benefit to you, to have romance and managing a difficult romance at a difficult time in both of your lives, just to have that off your plate. And your focus can then exclusively shift to finding a way back into your field and finding a better job and reestablishing yourself. And if she comes running once you get that better job and you've reestablished yourself and your cash flow is better, then maybe she's only interested in you when you can take care of her in whatever ways you may have been taking care of her, being generous to her in whatever ways you may have been being generous to her. And then you have to ask yourself if you want to be with somebody who's only there for the good times. And if it's clear that she's only there for the good times, if indeed she comes running back to you once, you know, with all your focus on your professional life, once you get that back in order and things are clicking for you again, yeah, if she comes running back to you, then you have a decision to make about whether you want to be wanted conditionally or whether you want to be wanted unconditionally, whether you want to be with somebody who's only interested in you in flush times, as opposed to somebody who's going to stick by your side when the shit hits the fan. Here's a little tip for my listeners, particularly my straight male listeners, who want to get laid, and that is all of my straight male listeners. A man who cooks is sexy. It is true. I live with men who cook. They are sexy. Let Blue Apron help you get laid by making something delicious like Vidouvian shrimp and sweet chili sauce or arquette pasta and cauliflower. Blue Apron offers three flexible plans, the two-person plan, four-person family plan, and the WW freestyle plan. We do the four-person plan at our house so that we have plenty of leftovers, and they are always delicious. And because Blue Apron brings everything to our house that we need to make an amazing meal, we are always cooking something delicious. It really helps, the Blue Apron plan, because of our hectic schedules. Sometimes it feels like we have no choice but to go out to eat, and I don't like to go out to eat more than we should or more than we want to. But with Blue Apron arriving at the house, I actually have the time to cook a delicious meal and everything I need to cook a wholesome, delicious meal instead of defaulting to takeout. Blue Apron's menu is carefully designed and tested by their test kitchen chefs. Blue Apron's chef-designed recipes include amazing specialty sauces and premium ingredient blends that would otherwise be difficult, expensive, or time-consuming to source or make. Terry loves Chrissy Teigen's recipes just as much as he loves Chrissy Teigen's tweets. To start making delicious, brag-worthy meals at home without the hassle, try Blue Apron. Check out this week's menu and get $60 off when you visit blueapron.com/savage. That's blueapron.com/savage. Blue Apron, they like to say, a better way to cook. I always say about me, the only way I have ever cooked.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 57-year-old woman on the East Coast, married to the same man for 20 years. Our two kids are mostly grown and are increasingly independent. We have a terrific sex life, better than ever, really, and are enjoying this well-earned, relatively mellow phase of our life together. Last spring, I became reacquainted with a guy I'd vaguely known in college who lives on another continent. I'll call him Link. Link is gay and married to an older guy who lives on yet a third continent half the year. Link and I began corresponding, long letters, often daily. It is sort of a witty Dorothy Parker, Robert Benchley sort of correspondence, if that means anything to you. We read books, discuss politics, and are each other's confidants and sounding boards. While our friendship is sort of flirty, it is not and never has been at all sexual. It is, however, quite emotionally intimate and has become extremely important to me. His sensibility has encouraged me towards greater kindness generally. Even my husband and kids have noticed it. And the correspondence has inspired me to begin writing creatively again, which I had not done for years. Link comes back to the States every 12 to 18 months, and last summer we met up in various American cities. I was in for work on the company dime, shared hotel rooms and even a bed once, though again, nothing remotely sexual. My husband has met Link, who crashed on our couch once, and though he is clearly not interested in being friends with Link, he's fine with me having this platonic friendship. He himself has a long-term friendship with a straight, now recently divorced woman outside of our relationship, which he claims is completely platonic, and I believe him, though I would not be comfortable with the two of them traveling alone or sharing a bed under any circumstances. Here is the issue. Link has invited me to visit him, and we have begun discussing possibly traveling a bit over there. I very much want to take him up on it. I have a ton of frequent flyer miles, so the cost is theoretically not an issue. I would be fine with my husband coming with me on this trip, though it is to places he has no interest in visiting, and I don't have enough miles to cover both tickets. All of our money is combined, and we contribute the same income to our finances. Is it weird that I have this intense platonic friendship outside of my marriage, even if the spouses are cool with it? I'm afraid to even bring this up for fear of my husband shooting down the idea and possibly telling me enough is enough already with the constant communication with another guy. Also, I don't want to hurt him by saying I want to go without him, even though I sort of do. I have other dear male friends, gay and straight, but this one does feel different somehow. Am I fooling myself that my very intense and loving feelings for Link are not sexual? Should I just be happy with what is clearly a better deal than many married women my age have and drop this travel idea for the sake of domestic harmony? How can I approach asking my husband for permission to take such a trip, and what should I do if he says no?
If you ask and your husband says no, you should do what you would expect your husband to do if he asked to go traveling with his close platonic straight female friend and you said no. You would want him to honor that no for your reasons. You aren't comfortable with the idea of your husband traveling extensively or spending the weekend or sharing a bed with this person that he might be tempted, could possibly be intimate with. Now, you can't be intimate with your friend because he's gay and you're straight. You have what sounds like a really powerful intellectual connection and a romantic friendship. And romantic friendships are wonderful things. You ask me if this is weird. Your friendship with this person who has done so much good for you in your life, that you've benefited so extraordinarily from this friendship. Your kids have noticed, your husband's noticed that because of whatever anti-poison Link has been pouring in your ear, this man has been pouring in your ear, you're a kinder, gentler, more patient person and a better wife and better mother because of this guy. And so you ask if it's weird. No, it doesn't sound weird. It sounds wonderful. And there are studies out there that show that having really intimate, connected relationships with people who aren't your spouse doesn't threaten or undermine marriages if everyone's secure and not a weaky, self-centered bag of slop who can't stand the idea of their partner having anyone else in their life who provides them with any sort of emotional sucker. But these kinds of relationships make primary relationships stronger and more resilient. We need confidants in our lives. We need close, intimate friends. We need not just a spouse, perhaps, but we need a best friend. And it's, you know, people like to say, oh, my husband is my best friend, my wife is my best friend. Yeah, those are two separate roles, and bundling them together is often a mistake. And other studies have shown that couples, long-term couples who've been together for decades, who do things like, oh, occasionally take solo vacations, occasionally travel with friends as opposed to with their spouses. They then come home and they have things to share with their spouse. They have new things to talk about. Maybe they visited a place that they thought their spouse would love and they're excited to tell them about it so that next time they go to this place, they can bring the spouse or travel alone with the spouse. That this exactly what you propose, a vacation with your bestie, is good for your marriage. Not necessarily bad for your marriage, but because your finances are merged and because your husband has a say, you would need to ask him. And again, if the answer is no, if he's not comfortable with this idea, at least yet, you have to honor that no. You have to make sure that your husband understands that he comes first and his emotional comfort matters more to you than your desire to gallivant about Europe or wherever the fuck with this guy, with your friend. He might say yes, though. Sounds like your husband isn't threatened by this guy or insecure about your relationship. He might be jealous about the idea of you running around doing these things that you know, couples typically imagine themselves doing together, traveling around Europe, and in his jealousy, want that experience to be something that you two share. Then you can have a conversation about how this experience doesn't have to be mutually exclusive, that you can do this with your friend and do it on the cheap with your friend, but you can also then make a long-term plan to do this kind of grand tour with your husband too. I would encourage you to revisit your fatwa against him ever traveling with his platonic female best friend. Your husband trusts you alone with this man who identifies as gay. Probably goes a long way toward convincing your husband that he can trust you alone with this man. You would have to cover a little bit more ground emotionally to trust your husband alone with this woman that he has this relationship with. But not every man who happens to be straight wants to sleep with every woman who happens to be straight. Not every man who has a female friend is interested in her sexually. It is possible for straight men and straight women to have close, intimate, best friendy kind of relationships. Relationships, again, that will contribute to the strength and success of your marriage or their marriage with opposite sex partners, where the relationship is not sexual and there is no sexual interest on either side. You could ask your husband for more reassurance about that. You could drill down. If you wanted to travel with this guy and he wanted to travel with her, you could have a conversation, not just with your husband, but with her, and see if that doesn't set your mind at ease. We sometimes talk about buttholes on this show. Broadly, generally buttholes, but sometimes very specific individual buttholes, like your butthole. Can we talk about your butthole right now? How clean do you think it is? I bet, like most buttholes, it could be a lot cleaner. There's nothing worse than getting intimate with a partner or two and then catching a whiff of your own funk. You know if you smell it. You know if you can smell it. They definitely smelt it. You know if you can smell it. They definitely smell it. You know if you can smell it. They definitely smelled it as well. Well, guess what? You can prevent that awkward moment by including Tushy in your pre-coitus prep. Tushy Bidet is the modern bidet attachment that washes your rump and everything else you use to hump, leaving you fresh and clean and ready to get dirty. It can also be used to spruce up your vulva, and it's perfect for after-sex cleanup too. Tushy Bidet attaches to any standard toilet within minutes and doesn't require any electricity or additional plumbing. I know you probably think bidets are super expensive, but hold on to your butthole. Tushy starts at $79. That's cheaper than the average vibrator. I mean, if you're going to invest in your own sexual pleasure, if you're going to bust out a couple hundred bucks on a flashy vibrator, why not invest less than 100 in your health and cleanliness down there too by getting your hands on a Tushy bidet? Go to hellotushy.com for 10% off your first bidet.
Hey, Dan, Nancy, and the tech savvy at Risk Youth. I am a cishet female in my early 30s from the East Coast. I just recently left an 11-year relationship and am new to the online dating thing. I've been having actually really good experience. The first couple guys I went out with were considerate and fun, and I had a great time. But recently, I went out with a guy who on the first date, we didn't really discuss a whole lot about kink or sex in detail. But while we were hooking up, he started telling me that he was going to try to get me pregnant, that he wanted to get married. And I was just trying to play along. If that's his kink, I want to be kink friendly. Maybe that's naive and dumb, but I played along. That's what he wanted to hear. And then he started talking about water play, me peeing on his face and fingering his ass, and it just really escalated. We finished up, and while I was in the bathroom showering, he came in and pissed in front of me. Like, didn't knock, just came right on in and did his thing. And maybe that, I don't know, Dan. I didn't want to ghost him, but I don't really have a whole lot to say to him after that. And he recently messaged me and kind of got shitty with me about it. Telling me he could take rejection, but he clearly can't. But that leads me to my question. When is it appropriate to, like, bring kink on somebody? Obviously not during your first sexual encounter, I wouldn't think. But, hey, I don't know. I'm a neophyte at this. What do you think, Dan?
Well, if you meet someone through a kink site, if you meet someone on a FetLife or a Recon, You're allowed to roll your kinks out immediately. In fact, you may have led with your kinks. But if you're on a regular old dating app and you meet somebody and hook up, the wrong time to spring your kinks on them is during sex, and you were within your rights to ghost on this guy. There's nothing necessarily wrong with an impregnation kink. There are guys out there who have impregnation kinks, and not all of those guys are straight guys. If you dig around in the darker corners of the fetish websites, you will find gay dudes who are into impregnation, and you will find photo-manipulated dirty stories with guys who got pregnant after being fucked in the ass, and a lot of dirty talk about knocking a guy up. So it's not just straight guys who have this impregnation thing, and there are certainly women out there who are turned on by the idea of impregnation. But you don't just spring that on someone. You don't spring piss play on someone. Not that he sprang it on you. He raised the subject through dirty talk of his interests. And maybe he needs to hear about these things in order to get hard and get off. If so, then he also needed to maybe roll that out before your first sexual encounter. But I have always believed that, you know, if you're kinky, it's fine to be kinky. If you meet somebody through a vanilla kind of route, if you meet somebody on a vanilla dating website who may be kinky themselves, you're not the only kinky person on the vanilla dating websites, or if you meet somebody through work or friends or socializing and you have kinks, I think those first few times that you have sex before you lay your kink cards on the table, you want to demonstrate to them that you're good at vanilla sex too, and that when you lay your kink cards on the table, they're not doomed. Not that I think kinks are dooms. I think kinks are Christmas mornings. They're fun presents to open, but they're not signing up for only going through the motions of your kink for the rest of their lives. Vanilla is something that you enjoy and you can do, and you've already demonstrated that to them. And I think when you roll your kinks out, when you lay those kink cards on the table, you should emphasize that these are your kinks. These are things that turn you on in a particular way. Also, vanilla sex turns you on and you're interested in meeting their needs. You just want to put your needs out there too. This guy did none of that. This guy obviously has both boundary and common sense issues, demonstrated poor judgment, also demonstrated cloddishness in walking into the bathroom while you were taking a shower, a moment you might have wanted or expected a little bit of privacy, even in someone else's house, and took a leak. You know, if it was an emergency, that's what kitchen sinks and hot water and a little bleach are for. So yeah, he did it all wrong. And obviously you're a woman who's willing to go there, maybe willing to finger a dude's ass, maybe willing to engage in a little bit of piss play if you have a good feeling about the person who's interested in doing those things with you. Also interested maybe in a little dirty talk about impregnation as a kink, but not with this guy. This guy went about it all wrong, made you feel uncomfortable in his presence, made you question his judgment, and made you feel unsafe and disrespected. And you are allowed to reject the motherfucker already. And again, I'm not a big fan of ghosting in general. I think we should err on the side of using our words, or if you want to do it via text, using your thumbs. But this is an instance where I could sign off on just disappearing on a motherfucker. People are always asking me how to improve their sex lives, and I don't want to criticize anyone's life choices or decor or anything, but maybe you could have better sheets on the bed. That might help. I mean, really, look at those things. It is time for some Boll & Branch. Everything Boll & Branch makes, from bedding to blankets, is made from 100% pure organic cotton, which means they start out super soft and they get even softer over time. And with Boll & Branch, you buy directly from them, so you're essentially paying wholesale prices. Luxury sheets can cost up to $1,000 in the store, but Boll & Branch sheets are only a couple of $100. Everyone who tries Boll & Branch sheets loves them. That's why they have thousands of five-star reviews. Boll & Branch also uses only sustainable and responsible methods of sourcing and manufacturing, and they donate a portion of every sale to a charity to help fight human trafficking while preserving fair prices for consumers. Shipping is free, and you can try them for 30 nights. If you don't love them, send them back for a refund, but I doubt you'll want to send them back. Still, there's no risk here, and no reason then not to give Boll & Branch sheets a try. To get you started right now, my listeners get $50 off your first set of sheets at bollandbranch.com when you use the promo code SAVAGE.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 25-year-old bisexual, male-presenting, non-binary person. I don't know if that's all the labels work anymore, but due to my upbringing, I really have no experience with meeting people or in relationships. I live in New York, which is pretty much one of the biggest cities for people around my age to go and simply meet each other and hook up. But I'm completely failing at it. I go to bars, I go to places, and I just really don't know what to do. I was hoping you can go and give me tips on how to meet people and I guess go and develop some confidence to go and replace my inexperience so I can hopefully get experience one day. And if you have any tips on how to go and get over that small little pity party you have when all you hear is no, even though I know I'm not entitled to anyone or anything, not anything, people aren't things.
You're not entitled to anyone or anything, and people are also things. People are objects too, not just objects. That's the important thing to remember. But you're allowed to want, and when the things that you want aren't in your life, you're allowed to have feelings about that. And sometimes those feelings, including feelings of self-pity, if you don't allow yourself to stew in them, if you don't allow yourself to succumb to resentment and bitterness, can be very motivating. They prompt you to get out there and do something about it so you can start to feel better because you have more of the things in your life, including companionship, intimacy, friends, lovers, that you would like to have. All right, when you go to the bars, when you go out to places, look around. Most people don't go out to these places alone. They go out to these places with a couple of friends or a little posse, people that they're not sexually interested in, so that they have someone to chat with. And that's an important aspect of seeing people out in bars. You kind of want to see them with friends because just the existence of friends is sort of a low bar vouching for them. Oh, this person has enough social skills to have people who enjoy their company. Maybe I would also enjoy their company. That person who is interacting with a few friends in a bar is much more attractive than the person who is standing in a corner of the bar all by themselves, not talking to anyone. So look around your life. Who do you know who is single and might like to run around town with you a little bit? Ask that person to hang out with you and just be blunt. I want to go out. I want to hang out. I want to meet people. And, you know, I could use a wingman running around buddy. I would also be happy to be your wingman running around buddy. Let's get a few people together and go out and socialize. You will, A, be more attractive to people you haven't met in that bar, to strangers, by dint of being with people. And B, even if you don't meet anybody when you're out that night looking for the kind of companionship or lover that you'd like to find, whether you're looking for a lover for an evening or forever, you will have a better time. It won't feel like time wasted. You won't stand in a corner feeling self-conscious about being alone. Even if you don't meet anybody else, you will have had a nice time out with your friend or your friends. Also, get online. 80% of queer couples meet online these days. Plurality of straight couples meet online these days. Most people who are coupled or partnered, whether again it's for the evening or the rest of their lives, met online. And those are usually the first time, face-to-face, one-on-one meetings. Have a few interactions with somebody, establish mutual interests, establish mutual attraction, yes, based on your accurate recent photos, and then propose a coffee date, meet up at a time when you have an engagement, you have something you have to go do afterwards, so there's no expectation or pressure of hanging out or anything happening just then. Just a quick meetup for coffee to establish that you are as attracted to each other in person as you are via the internet, via DM. Don't overinvest. Don't sink too much time or emotional energy into some torrid direct message or text message affair, because you may meet up with somebody and you may not click in person. And then the larger the emotional investment, the larger the investment of time and sharing that you've made, you know, sharing of your feelings and hopes and dreams and desires, the larger investment you've made in advance of that first meeting, if it doesn't work out, and most don't, the more hurt you're going to be, or the more hurt they're going to be, and the more disappointed you're going to be, or the more disappointed they're going to be, or you're both going to be. And it's just not worth setting yourself up for that kind of sense of failure and futility. So keep it brief in advance of that first meeting. And then if you like each other at that first meeting, get carried away via text, but then meet up again sooner rather than later. But you live in New York City, and it sounds like you like to go out, and you'd rather meet people out in meet space IRL in real life, like they were saying on the internet 20 years ago. So I would urge you to do that. The thing it sounds like you're doing wrong is you're going out alone. Now, some people go out alone, and they have the self-confidence or the charisma, and some people just got that kind of charisma where people want to come up and talk to them even if they're alone. But if you don't have that kind of self-confidence, or you don't have that kind of immediate pull, go out with friends. And you don't have to sneakily insinuate yourself into a friend group and manipulate them into going out with you at a time where you might want to pick up other people or interact with other people. You just be honest about what you're doing. Hey, I would like to go hang out at this event, maybe meet some people. Why don't we go out together? Why don't we hang out together at this event? Would you like to come with me? And see what they say. If they say yes, great. If somebody that you just asked said no, ask somebody else.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 35-year-old straight male from the East Coast calling in for the first time. And I know you like wedding questions, so I've got a wedding question for you. I'm at a wedding right now, cocktail hour. And my cousin is here with a date. And the last night, he was FaceTiming with another girl. Now, question, they're just friends, but he traveled out of state to go to the wedding. Should he be FaceTiming with another girl, even if they're just friends, and he's a day of the wedding?
Congratulations to the bride and groom, whoever they are. It must be a really exciting, eventful wedding if this is the kind of shit people are thinking and talking about, or this is the kind of shit you yourself are thinking and talking about during their wedding. Who gives a fuck who your cousin is FaceTiming during the wedding? Yeah, he's away at a wedding. He's there with a date, and he briefly, I assume briefly, I imagine that if he was on FaceTime for 3 or 4 hours with this friend of his back at home, that you would have mentioned that he briefly FaceTimed with somebody else. He made a phone call during this destination wedding, I presume, since everybody traveled to it. And I don't see the sin in that. I would perhaps take this question a little bit more seriously if it were your cousin's date that had called. Now, maybe I can infer from the fact that you even know about this that there was some scandal or controversy, or perhaps your cousin's date was upset by this, and that's how everybody found out. How did everybody find out about this fucking FaceTime call? Last time I made a FaceTime call, I don't think anybody but the person I FaceTime called knew about it. But if it was because this date of your cousin's was upset and made a scene, I think that maybe she's the problem. Your cousin's not the problem. Your cousin has a friend. It's a platonic friendship. It's a platonic friendship with somebody who happens to be of the opposite sex. And he gave this person a call. He's away at a wedding. He's not in a secret, undisclosed location, cut off from all communication with the outside world. We are still, when we are trapped at other people's weddings, allowed to touch base with friends and family and coworkers and colleagues who aren't trapped with us at this destination wedding. So, yeah, I don't see how this is a problem, A, unless it was a problem for the date. And even if it was a problem for the date, I don't see how it's any of your business or mine.
Hey, Dan, this is in response to the caller in 677 that had the issue with the boyfriend leaving his stuff in her apartment. You might have made a mistake with that because she's running the risk of getting her deposit kept by her landlord. So my suggestion is, and I've done this before, is go to one of those self-storage places. You can get a small kind of oversized locker space for about $35. You put all of the stuff in there, put a cheap padlock from the dollar store on it, leave him a message saying your stuff is at such and such a place. And if they don't pick it up, then it's their problem. And the people at the storage place will be happy to take his junk and donate it or sell it at auction. This way, you save yourself a lot more hassle and you don't have to see the motherfucker again.
Hi, Dan and the Tech Savvy At-Risk Youth. I'm calling about the episode where the woman doesn't want to fuck people who voted for Donald Trump, which is totally reasonable. And I have a suggestion that she consider, you know, expanding the pool of non-Trump voting people she's meeting. And a great way to do that is to volunteer on a political campaign. Obviously, she can, you know, pick whoever she likes in the Democratic primary. She can also think about, you know, local elections. She can look at swing left, sister district. district places. She's in a deep, deep red area. There's probably places that are purple nearby that need people to help get the vote out and swing them into blue, you know, and if she isn't decided yet on a candidate in the Democratic primary, she should think about Elizabeth Warren.
Hi, Dan. This is a response to the woman on last week's episode who felt like she wasn't a feminist because she didn't want to have sex when she was on her period. First of all, your advice was spot on. Of course, she is a feminist for not wanting to have sex when she doesn't want to. That is all about advocating for ourselves. And I think your advice to her was really good. If you don't want to do something, don't do it. I also wanted to put out there that I really related to her story and that she feels really sexual when she's ovulating during certain times of her cycle, but at other times, sex is just not interesting to her. I feel exactly the same way when I'm ovulating. I'm super sexual. And then the closer I get to my period, the hornier I get. But as soon as my period hits, I'm not interested in sex at all. The way that I've worked through this with my partner, who is really wonderful and loving and supporting, is that when I'm going to have my period, I usually say something kind of cute to him, like, I've closed the shop for a few days. And he knows that's his cue to go out and buy me a burger or some meat to cook me a burger and some dark chocolate. He kind of fawns over me and cuddles me a lot and really gives me a lot of warmth and security and hugs when I'm on my period, which is what feels really good. At the same time, that also makes me feel really loving and good towards him. So one of the things that I like to do is I like to watch a movie with him while I'm on my period, and he'll lay down and I'll kind of lay in his lap and I'll give him a blowjob while we're watching a movie. You know, I blow him to completion, or sometimes I just hang out with his dick in my mouth because I really like it. And there's no better snack than a dick in your mouth when you're on your period.
And we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you want to record a question or a comment for a future show, give us a buzz, 206-302-2064. The 15th Annual Hump Film Festival, My Dirty Little Porn Film Festival, opens in Seattle, Portland, San Francisco, Vancouver, and Olympia, Washington in mid-November. I will be hosting screenings myself in Seattle, Portland, and Vancouver. And then Hump will tour the country, the 15th Annual Hump. It is a great lineup this year. If you want to see it first, you're going to have to get your butt to Seattle, Portland, San Francisco, Vancouver, or Olympia, or sit tight, and Hump will come to a city near you next year. Again, go to humpfilmfest.com for tickets, and tickets for the premiere screenings are selling out fast. Follow me on Twitter, @FakeDanSavage. Follow Simon Doonan on Twitter, @SimonDoonan. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian, and me and the Tech Savvy At-Risk Youth and Nancy will all be back at you next week with another installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thanks for downloading.